You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Although Thomas Wolfe warned you can't go home again, in M.G. Vasanji's latest novel, Kamal Punja tries to do just that. He's returned to his native Tanzania after 40 years in hopes of finding his first love, Saida. But what he finds is a different country from the one he'd left, and something of a mystery to unravel. Two-time Giller Award winner M.G. Vasanji is the author of 7 novels. His latest, this one that I just mentioned, The Magic of Saida, is published by Knopf. I'm very pleased that it brings him back to our show. Hi.
Hi.
Did you set out to write something of a mystery novel?
Not really, but I guess just to keep pace, and you know, I mean, life is a mystery, and I mean, you never know when you start a novel where you're going to end up, you know. And it just, in my books, it happens that way. There is a little bit of something unknown or to find out, you know.
The history of Tanzania and the mix of cultures there is present from the very beginning of the novel. In the past, both personal and historical, that past is an important part of this novel. People in this country probably don't know as much about Tanzania as they know about some other countries in East Africa.
Well, Tanzania, the part I'm writing about is the East African coast, the Zanzibar, and you know, the coast that's across from it. The culture there is predominantly Swahili, so the Swahili is spoken there, and then the culture is Swahili, which is Islamic as well as African, and it is, there's a heavy, you know, very strong tradition of poetry there. Also traditions of magic, different kinds of magic. So that somehow drew me to the place.
But it's also has a German colonial experience,
yeah,
unlike so much of Africa, which was British or French.
Yeah, at the beginning of the 20th century, the Germans, you know, started building their African empire. And in agreement with other European powers, they were awarded Tanganyika, which was called German East Africa, and what's now called Namibia, which was called Southwest Africa.
Is there still a German colonial presence there?
No, now the presence is more benign in terms of foreign aid, which I don't necessarily approve of, but at least it's, you know, well meant.
But also a lot of East Indians came over to all of East Africa, didn't they?
They came over, but long before. You know, they came before the Germans, before the British, like in the 19th and 18th centuries. Even before, you know, when Vasco da Gama went to India, he stopped over on the east coast of Africa, and you know, he got Indians. He saw Indians there and took one or two of them as guides to India.
So, but they became the merchant class of East Africa.
But the class that came were the merchant class from Western, you know, from Gujarat. So they came as traders of different sorts, and some of them became big magnates, and some remained some small shopkeepers. You know.
From the very beginning, we know that the story that we're reading is one that Kamal has told a local publisher named Martin Kigoma, who meets Kamal in the hospital. Does that add a layer to the narrative? Would it be different if we were reading what Kamal wrote?
Yeah, because obviously Martin is looking at Kamal from a distance. So he can not only comment on how Kamal is relating the story, but also on what has happened in the meantime. And just gives a background to the place.
Because he's been there all along, whereas Kamal has been away.
He's an objective observer. It adds a dimension to the novel.
But also, history is never totally objective. We depend on the person who's telling the story.
Exactly, and history affects all of us and what we are now. I often think about it. The reason I'm here partly is what happened historically in the place where I came from, and all the interactions of cultures, the politics of the Cold War, all kinds of stuff determined what happened, and I ended up here. You know.
Well, when you started this, were you setting out to create a blend of the oral tradition, Kamal's story to Martin, with the written word, the story that Martin has written for us?
Well, it happened because, as I said, the culture there on the coast, the Swahili culture, is oral to a large degree, although it's also written. It's a very strong poetic tradition. And while I grew up with poetry, you know, sort of listening to it on the radios
Swahili poetry or Indian poetry?
Yes, Swahili poetry. If you go on my way to school, I would hear it from the radio, you know. So that always intrigued me, and it was always sung. It's a poetry that's sung, so it stays in their head, you know.
So what languages did you grow up with?
I grew up with two Indian languages, Kachi and Gujarati, Swahili and English, and a little bit of the Hindi from the films.
Why has Kamal decided to return to Tanzania? Is he having a midlife crisis?
I think so. I mean, yeah, he's reached a stage in life which all of us come to sooner or later, I think, where we ask ourselves, what's it all been about, you know? And for him, he's left some unanswered questions in his life relating to his mother, who abandoned him for good reasons, relating to a girl whom he left or was forced to leave and then couldn't go back to. So it's something that pulls him back, has always pulled him back, and he reaches a stage in life where, you know, he's a doctor, so he has a lot of money in Canada, and he just wants something more.
Why was he forced to leave? In some countries like Uganda, Idi Amin forced all of the Indians to leave, and then, of course, Uganda then asked the Indians to come back later after Idi Amin was
In this
was
case,
sent into exile.
There were two reasons. One was when he was 10, and Kamal is, in fact, what we used to call half-caste, you know, half-African, half-Indian. And his African mother decides when he's 10 that he has better prospects if he's brought up as an Indian, so she sends him off to an Indian relative. And she then starts a new life. So that's one point of departure. The other is, in fact, he happened to be at medical school in Uganda, where Idi Amin happened. And he was forced to leave. You know.
Everybody was forced to
leave.
Yeah,
from Uganda. He could have gone back to Tanzania, but then other things happened, and he ended up in Canada, where prospects were better, and he met a girl, and so on.
We first meet Kamal in a hospital. What's he being diagnosed with?
Well, the diagnosis is not clear. It's malaria or something else. He himself is a medical doctor, and he thinks he's been poisoned.
And what would lead him to that? After all, malaria would be a common problem in the area.
Well, he had gone through. He had been captured by these traditional black magicians, which is, you know, and they use drugs, you know, well-known drugs in the chemical industry. At least the chemists know about them, that make you. Hallucinate and talk and so on. So he knows he's been through that, and he's been poisoned.
And why would they have done that to him?
Well, he wanted to go anywhere to look for this girl Saida, whom he had loved, and goes into dangerous territory. Just walks into a den of black magicians.
They're
very much there, you know. I mean, it was not fantasy, because I remember just 3-4 years ago, they were kidnapping albinos, you know, and just using them for magical purposes, killing them and so on. So
thought albinos had magical qualities?
Yeah, so this kind of magic does exist, and that's where he gets sort of caught into.
And there are lots of references to jinns and spirits made by the Tanzanian characters. Now, jinns I associate with Islamic culture.
Yeah, because
the spirits with
Swahili African culture is Islamic, right? And lots of reference to jinns, spirits. Sometimes you cannot distinguish between one or the other. And when I was growing up, we always were afraid of spirits, or walking beside a grave, or walking under some trees at the hour of dusk, and because there was a belief that spirits lived in some trees, and if you happen to pass by a baobab tree in the evening, they might just get into you and turn you into an albino.
And did you believe that at the time?
Oh yeah, I was terrified.
My guest is M.G. Vasanji. His book, The Magic of Saida, or Saida?
Saida, yeah.
It is published by Knopf. Many people he encounters ask him if he's interested in buying land to retire to. Is that a growing trend of people returning to Tanzania from abroad after they've retired?
It's on and off. I think there was a time when they tried to do that. There was a time that some people go for business to Tanzania and find that it works or doesn't work. So it does happen, but not too frequently.
Well, is it a place that I might want to retire to? What are the attractions?
Well, if you're from the tropics,
I am afraid of gins and spirits. So,
well, if you're from the tropics, you know, you might be attracted to a kind of easygoing life without the, you know, hassle of Western city. But there are discomforts. You know,
how did Kamal and Seda even know each other?
Well, they grew up together, and he was her teacher or tutor when he was 8 and she was 6, and they became very close friends. And then he was made to leave. And he would always think of her. And then as a teenager, as when he finishes school, he goes to meet her, and she's been married off. And that's when the real kind of passion develops.
Her grandfather, Mzee Omari Tamim, is a beloved poet. And at the beginning of the novel, he's embarking on writing a history of the modernization of the country. He's also said to be controlled by a djinn. How would a djinn control have a power over a poet?
Well, in this case, the story is complex because he, for various reasons, finds himself unable to write. He feels guilty, you know, having betrayed his brother to the German colonialists, for example. And he stops writing, and then he's encouraged to write by some British administrator, and he still cannot write. And then the djinn comes to him and says, "Look, I will help you." And he starts
writing.
So
is this kind of like divine inspiration?
It's not quite divine, although, you know, it's not divine, no. It's just a djinn, you know, and people believe in djinns, then the djinn is there. It's just one part of the culture, it's in the population. Everyone knows about this djinn. You know?
Now, Kamal is educated in Uganda, then makes his way to Canada, where he's been living for the last 40 years. He has a life that many of the people he grew up with would be envious of. How does he feel about his life and success?
Well, he accepts it. He accepts the fact that he's been able to do it, that he's been allowed to do it. And he's brought up two children who are doing well. You know, they're the doctor's kids. They've been to private schools. They're at universities. So he feels that there's nothing more for him. And this does happen. You know, I know people to whom it happens. He just wants to solve this riddle. And also, he comes from a time in Tanzania and a lot of Africa where there was idealism, where there was a commitment by the young to do something for the country. And that's what he had sort of aspired to do when he was young. So going back, there is that element in him still.
Well, he grew up in the 50s at a time when Africa is, the countries are starting to become independent. You were born in Kenya, right? And
yes.
Then grew up in Tanzania, arrived in Canada in 1978. There are parallels between you.
Yeah,
and
he comes
Kamal.
From my generation, and when I was in high school, you know, that's what we were told. You know, if you the child who passes through high school is like the boy in a village who's given all the water in the village to go and find more water for the rest of the villages. So that feeling of, in Africa, which was very much present in my Africa when I was growing up. Of course, he's no longer there, and when he goes there, he misses it. And the question for him is, well, what is he going to do?
What is the situation in Tanzania today, politically?
Politically, it's reasonably stable. There's a lot of unhappiness because of the economy, although there's a lot of wealth on the land, you know, minerals and natural gas and so on, but there's corruption. There is 85-90% of the country sleeps, you know, is dark at night. So there are those problems and a lot of unemployment among youth. So there's a lot of frustration. So we don't know where it will go. You know.
This is your 7th novel?
Yeah.
And all of them have used history, haven't they?
A bit. My second novel was set in Toronto. It was about new arrivals in Toronto. But, I mean, history is, for me, is what, especially when you come from a culture, from a place where the past was somehow relegated to an appendix to come back to later. And then when you're away from where you came from, it suddenly you feel that it's important to understand it. You know.
But I wonder how you became a writer. Did you always want to be a writer? Because you were a nuclear physicist before you published your first novel in 1989.
I think we always, when we were young, you like to write and you write your essays and the teachers give you A's and so on. But, you know, in Africa, writing was not an option. It's not a kind of thing. You had to get a job.
Nuclear physics is not your typical job.
Well, at that time I thought I would go back and teach in Dar es Salaam and, you know, at the university. So there was that to look for.
M.G. Vasanji is the author of 7 novels, the most recent, The Magic of Seda, also a couple of collections of short stories, and a biography of Mordechai Richler. His book is published by Knopf. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.